I'd just like to point out, it's not really about the lambs. I mean, I get the metaphor, but even like thematically, lambs are way down the list for this. And the line from the movie is about them screaming. They're hardly silent. Just, you know, if you're here for lamb content, you are not getting any. In The Silence of the Lambs, which was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hi, I'm Sean Collier, number one movie in America. It just struck me as a weird title.
The lambs are silent.
Right. Aren't the lambs now silent because she solves the case?
She solves the case, you know, and that will silence the screaming lambs in her mind. But like...
But it is. It's a strange...
Also, like, there's going to be other cases. It's not like she ended serial murdering forever.
It's like, you'll have more lambs.
Also, Easter's going to come every year. People are going to eat lamb.
Yeah. Anyway, that was Robin Hitchcock.
Hi.
And that's Camila Adams.
Hello.
I haven't been doing that lately, have I?
Yeah. It's been difficult with some of our recent...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Last one is what?
Get out.
Two white people looking to...
Which is just not accurate.
And also, it's going to get a little bit...
dicey.
Yeah.
I'm here with two
people who enjoyed Get Out.
Two mid-level police detectives who are really entertained by this guy's story. That is
how Camila and I would come together in that story. Look at this guy.
In a non-confrontational, awkward sort of way.
I do love that scene because we can push the politics of the moment aside and reflect on like, if this guy walked in carrying a dog and said this is exactly.
And I love her reaction is just when he's telling everybody and then when they start laughing and she's like, see, don't ever say I don't give you guys anything.
Let's revisit this and you can't handle the truth.
Well, as indicated, Get Out was the last show. I always say week. I know we do it every other week. You know what I mean. It's the new number one movie in America with a score of 95 achieved by sweeping the panel. 95 from all three of us. That has never happened before.
Crazy pants.
It was a great moment.
It was.
I dare to say it'll never happen again.
Know me a Hall of Fame.
Right.
Your new top 10. Number 10, The Fugitive, 85 and 2/3. Number 9, Purple Rain, also 85 and 2/3.
Right
on. Wins the tiebreaker. Ocean's 11 is 8th at 87. Number 7, Speed at... I might have done this wrong. Ocean's 11 and Speed are in there somewhere. They're in the top 10. Number 6, Ghost with an 88. Pulp Fiction is 5th, also an 88. Men in Black.
Men in Black was so good.
And it was a surprise.
Our fourth favorite thus far, 88 and 1/3. Alien is in 3rd at 89.5. Fight Club surrendering the throne to Get Out. I don't know if anything's beaten 95. I mean, one of the most Oscar successful movies of all time here
this
today.
This one was tough scoring for me.
I don't actually...
Actually going off
I
of
I have
it.
A score in my brain, but it is... flexible. We'll I know, see if yeah, you talk I
have,
me up or down.
I have a range written down.
Yeah.
Remember 30 seconds ago when I was like, that'll never happen again. It just did because we're all like, I don't know. I mean, not to say I don't love Silence of the Lambs. This is a great movie that I've had liked and admired for a very long time and probably watched 5 times, if not 10 times, beginning to end.
Yeah. I've seen this movie an awful lot and it is one of those movies that is... extremely watchable. Like, it just draws your attention in so much. Like, I remember yesterday I was like, I am not in the mood to watch this kind of movie, and then I put it on and I was like, never mind, I'm having a great time.
Well, yeah, because like, I mean, just like some of the camera choices in itself, like the shots where the camera is literally drawing you into Hannibal's face. Like,
so let's just talk about it. The thing that Jonathan Demme does where he has his actors talk directly to the camera, I hate it.
Really?
I hate it. And I think that it works better here than in any of his other movies. And I think it specifically works really well when Jodie Foster and Anthony Hopkins are squaring off. I think that is when it's like, this gimmick that you love actually finally makes sense. And I
can't think of any other Demi movies right off. What?
So I was going to say, I don't know if, so he has a very weird career. So in the 80s, he made a bunch of comedies, right? Married to the Mob and Melvin and Howard, which I've never seen, but won Best Supporting Actress and Best Original Screenplay. And he made concert documentaries. Like he did the Talking Heads Stop Making Sense, which is incredible. If you've never watched it, I highly recommend it. As far as I know, this is like the first like serious movie he did. Huh. So it's possible that he only started doing this thing then.
And then he was just like, it was so effective.
Exactly.
Let's keep it up.
Right. Like, but if you see Philadelphia, he did that.
Okay.
Constant. Yeah. Every like just ugh. Every goddamn interaction in that courtroom in that movie is set directly into a camera.
Yeah.
And I find it so off-putting. I do not like it.
That's what, now that you mention it. Yes, Silence of the Lambs and Stop Making Sense are the only Jonathan Demme movies I've seen.
Oh,
you've never seen Philadelphia?
I have not. That's in the Schindler's List category where I was a child at the time and haven't had a day where I'm like, I'd like to be sad about AIDS for a week.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? You know what struck me this time is that's very good when they're doing the back and forth talking close-ups. Mm. Sometimes it comes back at odd times. I don't know why that happened with her and
her friend
Casey Lemons at the end. I'm like, why is it happening
so
now?
Colin thinks they're girlfriends. And this is never occurred to me before, which is amazing because I am usually all about imagining gal pals where gal pals don't exist. Yeah. But he's like, they're just chilling in their bathrobes. And I'm like,
with your roommate and.
Are they roommates?
I assume.
I just
assumed they
were in the FBI Academy.
I'm sure.
I just assumed they were like a dorm.
Yeah, I mean, when I said, I was like, listen, they are clearly the only women for miles.
Right.
Obviously, they're going to glom onto each other and become close quickly. But if they are girlfriends, get it.
Yeah. Those shots are great. I like the shot more where he is like leaning one shoulder on the glass and going over the thing because he looks like a mythical creature that has been dropped into this world.
Yeah.
Like it's just far back enough that you're like, is this a human or some kind of fawn from Narnia that eats people?
Does incredible things with his posture in this movie.
Yeah.
He looks like he is hanging.
Yeah.
Like he looks like he is on a human.
It's like a Nosferatu.
Hanger. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Like
that's kind of
what
that's
he's probably
doing.
Where he got
probably.
It. Yeah, you're smart.
There's a moment where when she does hand over the stuff and he like, you know, he's looking at it and he just kind of winks at her.
Yeah. No one has weaponized charm this well since Bela Lugosi.
Yeah.
Like every other thriller, horror movie, noir, mystery, there's some guy trying to be dashing and yet scary. Almost never works. Right. It's almost ever just like gives you the skeevies in a bad way.
Yeah.
And here you're like, man, I would love to let this gentleman eat my face.
Yeah, I might go that far.
But, you know, I can see he draws you in it. But he also like he has this thing where he will simultaneously like compliment Clarice and then read her to filth like within like 2 minutes of each other.
It's part where he says you sometimes wear blah 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 French perfume but not today. Woof, that is I was saying before, I'm like, anytime you tell a woman her perfume smells nice, because I told someone her perfume smells nice at your house the other day and I meant it and it was sincere. But then I was like, fuck, that's always a thing that you probably shouldn't say, because then you're telling them I could smell your perfume.
And then, no, so people want to, you
know, like going through that whole angst with Colin. Anyway, all of this is to say that that way he's saying, A, you wear too much perfume when you wear it. B, you haven't showered since you last wore it.
Yikes.
Like, it's just reading her for filth.
I've never thought of it that way.
Well, I have.
And I just caught this watch and he was like, what did Mig say to you? And she tells him and he's like, I cannot.
Yes.
Like, I for one cannot.
Right.
And then he talks about her cheap shoes. It's like, damn.
I was also saying to Colin, I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's the first time I ever heard the C word when I saw this, because I saw this movie when I was like 8. Like, oh, wow. I was like way too young when I saw this movie. And I also remember it was when I rewatched it in high school that I was like, oh, we threw cum at her.
No, it's not really until Blu-ray that you can really get that.
Yeah.
Like, on every VHS I ever saw it on, you thought like, oh, he just kind of went blah and she went, whoo, you know.
Right.
And then it was when I bought the Blu-ray, I was like, oh.
Yeah, it was like much later in my life when I realized
I was
that.
Truly like, ah!
When this came out, I was freshman in high school. Did not see it then, but I was probably still in high school by the time I actually saw it. Whenever it came on CBS.
Did you not see it
In the theater?
No, this was well before my foray into psychological thrillers or even just the fact that it wasn't accessible to me. I didn't have, I wasn't able to go out and do things on my own.
It's on cable so much. I wonder if they
probably
cut all of that or if there is a yippee-ki-yay Mr. Falcon of it.
I always assumed it was he spit on her. I think is what
even the phrase.
I bet he just says, "I smell you."
It wasn't like, "I smell your butt." Like, because I would have read, that would have matched.
Don't let them give also you a shine insulting about your haircut.
So many segments, and we could just keep talking about Silence of the Lambs. But rather than do that, let me recap the film for you. Somebody tell me when to go.
Go.
Buffalo Bill is a mysterious serial killer who has the police stumped. Hannibal Lecter is a convicted serial killer who has everybody spooked. Clarice Starling is a plucky FBI agent in training who has most people feeling either paternal, misogynistic, or both. Scott Glenn sends Clarice to interview Hannibal, hoping that he will be intrigued by her and help them develop a profile of Buffalo Bill. He sees through it, but he's bored, and as it turns out, he knows Buffalo Bill, so he leads Clarice toward the truth, like me trying to get Robin and Camila to guess the number one song in America. Eventually, using all of this as an opportunity to eat some faces and escape. Meanwhile, Buffalo Bill fucked up and kidnapped a senator's daughter, so now everyone's actually serious about solving the case. News to him, though, he's still working on his skin suit and vibing in the basement to moody British dance music. The FBI thinks they have him cornered in Illinois, but Clarice tracks him to a house I have personally spent two nights in. She saves the day, kills Bill, and gets her badge. Hannibal leaves for a cannibalistic Caribbean vacation.
Nice. Good job. 5 seconds to spare.
Yeah, you can't do it in a straight line, because you'll be like, well, he kidnaps her, but then we don't go to him for a while, but then, and then Hannibal is, then he goes in the thing, and then he's in a cage, and then he, you know, you have to kind of jump around to explain what's actually
basically like three separate stories that are being told.
And I appreciate you didn't go too far into what bad clues Hannibal gives or doesn't give, because Colin kept asking me, it's like, but we know that, who is the friend person? And I'm like, I don't remember. It's some kind of anagram, right? Like, who even cares?
No, that jumped out at me a little bit the last time I watched it, and a lot this time, is I had to stop and go, wait a minute, does he know Buffalo Bill? Is he bluffing? Is he just, whose head is that? Why do we know where the head is? How does that, and you know what? I messaged Jen, one of the people that went to Buffalo Bill's house with me earlier in the year, and she was the one who watched every Hannibal movie and read every Hannibal book beforehand. And she's like, no. If you are reading the letter of the screenplay exactly, he's telling the truth about everything but the fake name. He gives an accurate description of him. Buffalo Bill is a guy that saw him once when he was a psychiatrist before he was arrested, and he's so pushy about the Buffalo Bill case files because he knows he can leverage that because he actually knows who this guy is.
Okay,
and could just drop that knowledge at any time.
It's also not important to this movie being good or bad.
That's true. It is one of the only knocks I have is that the more you watch this, the less most of what happens matters, right? And it's such a filmmaking achievement, and so many of the filmmaking achievements are just kind of hand-waved explanation-wise. Like, why do we have this brilliant cutting back and forth? We think the FBI are surrounding him, but really they're in the wrong state. Because for no reason they went, he's in Illinois, let's go, and flew a plane out
right
there. There is a little, no plot, just vibes in terms, and the vibes are immaculate, so it's fine.
Mostly. But
do you want to?
So,
you, as our resident killjoy, here's Robin Hitchcock.
I'll accept it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this movie's kind, well, I hesitate to be like, this movie is transphobic, period, because it tries so hard to pretend to not be transphobic because they are like, Buffalo Bill isn't trans. Therefore, him being a serial killer can't possibly be transphobic. He's just a guy.
Right.
But they're playing in the sandbox of gender fun, and they specifically talk about him seeking gender confirmation surgery and being turned away because he's not really trans, and that being like
Which I'm sure they looked into at great length in 1990. Right.
I mean, I do not know that history. I don't understand what the status was of gender confirmation surgery in the 90s and who qualified and who didn't. No idea. But they indicate that that is when he was like, well, fuck it, I'll be a serial killer.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, also, sort of, I think. Make a lady suit. That's the next step.
That's not, just, it's so not a thing. It's, it's playing in a sandbox of lurid vibes.
Yeah. Also, Hannibal kind of tries to allude to that this is just a consequence. Like, he doesn't really want to be killing these women. He just wants, he wants the suit more. But, I mean, it's not like, I'm sure he doesn't go in thinking, no, maybe this one will survive. Mm-hmm. But it's like consequence to it.
The characterization of Buffalo Bill, there's too much. It's a hat on a hat. He's got a swastika blanket in his boot.
Right.
When they drop the Nazi stuff in at the end, it's like, I knew he was bad.
We didn't need the extra.
Yeah. Right. It's like, oh, he's an expert seamstress. He's an expert bug guy. Right? Like, what is going on with this person? And it's just so, it's too much. You know, I'm a cis person, so it's very easy for me to be like, whatever, it's the 90s, it's vibes. Yeah. Like, and they say he's not really trans, right?
Yeah.
But for trans people, this movie is harmful.
Yeah.
And there's a really good piece by Emily St. James in Vox, which talks about this movie. It's like, this is one of my favorite movies. I am a trans woman. It is harmful to me, even though I love it. And so it kind of contextualizes that with things like Gone with the Wind, where it's like, this is a movie that is, you know, a huge part of cinema history, but is actively harmful. How do we reconcile that? And I think it will be interesting to see how the legacy of this movie continues in the next 50 years.
Yeah.
Given that flaw, that like that fundamental weakness of it, that it's just actively mean to people.
Yeah. In the interest of consistency, I don't want to be like, yeah, but it's really good.
It is really good.
Even though it is really good, but that doesn't mean that there aren't aspects of that part of the character that I'm like, I'm also a cis person, but where I draw the line, where I try to draw the line with horror movies is, is this person in your movie who may or may not be a villain otherwise gendered in some way.
Yeah.
That is not inherently a problem. It becomes inherently a problem where you're trying to show them being otherwise gendered and pointing that out as creepy.
Yeah. Right?
And sometimes this movie is on the right side of that, like Hannibal explaining he's not trans.
Right.
Sometimes it's on the wrong side of it, like showing him tuck and dance and showing him play with his nipple ring, the worst shot in the movie. When you're doing that, you're having your cake and eating it too. You're saying we're not being transphobic, but isn't this weird? That's where it becomes a problem. One, I do believe in, you know, grading on a historical curve. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Psycho shouldn't be watched anymore because it does this.
I also genuinely, every time I watch Psycho, forget that there is any kind of, he wears his mother's clothes.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I just forget that that's part of it.
Right. And 30 years, this being 30 years later, I can appreciate going from Psycho just being like, ooh, creepy, to this being like, ooh, creepy, but he's not a representation of the community. Okay, great.
Okay, and then they 30, also have that horrible line where Jodie Foster's like, trans people are very passive.
Okay, so that is where I forgot about that, because everything else that you're bringing up, and it just may be my own ignorance on the matter, but it just doesn't seem like him, with him doing his tuck and dance, tuck and twist. It doesn't seem like it's like, okay, he's doing this because he's trans, thus making him creepy. That's not how I see it. It's just more like he's doing this because he's a killer, because he's creepy.
Yeah.
Or just, you know, it's just like one of those many aspects of his personality or whatever, you know, the characteristics they're throwing upon him.
Yeah.
As just that, you know, he so happens to believe that he wants to be a woman or
wear a woman.
That's still not even clear.
This movie does not actually, like, they try very hard to be like, he's not trans, which I feel that they are doing to get off the hook. Mm-hmm. What do they actually think is going on with
him? I forget if I read that he has become so self-loathing that all he seeks is to become the opposite of himself in every way, including I will be a woman, I will be gentle, I will be, you know.
Wasn't that also the motivation of the killer in Red Dragon?
Maybe.
Yeah.
So this guy wrote the same book multiple times.
Oh, well, Red Dragon, it was more, it was a lot of self-loathing because of, you know, trauma from his grandmother.
He was like, I'm gonna like transform, right,
into like this mythical creature,
right?
But I don't know, it's a lot, and it's a heavy thing to think about, and I'm not saying that it's like it's not worth discussing and thinking about it, because it is something, it is a big question mark for me now that you bring it up. But and also I've always just kind of seen it as they were trying to clarify, no, he's not trans,
right?
And I just kind of thought of it as like this weird sexual kink where he was concerned, right, not necessarily that he was trying to reassign or confirm his gender or anything like that. It was just like some sort of weird sexual kink.
Yeah.
Of wearing someone else's skin.
You know, just that
how
thing.
You do. Right. And as far as psycho goes, as the resident psychologist, I think they do a great job at the very end of actually giving you an explanation.
Yeah.
Because they try to call Norman a transvestite. Mm-hmm. And he's like, no, that's not the case. This is all, it has nothing to do with sexuality. Right. It has nothing to do with any of that. This is just him being a part, turning into his mother, like playing the part.
It's interesting that we have probably 30, but the three prominent movies about the same serial killer, Psycho, Silence of the Lambs, and Texas Chainsaw, are all at some level inspired by the same serial killer.
It's Ed Gein,
Ed Gein.
Yeah. Was he?
I think Norman is the closest. I think he had a bizarre dependent relationship with his mother, and when she died, shit went south.
Right.
But yes, I'm glad we dealt with that. And sorry, honestly, to call you, not to call you the killjoy, no, which means you are the most,
my job.
You're the most eloquent about pointing these things out.
And I didn't feel particularly eloquent. Basically, I highly recommend you go read that piece.
Yeah,
it's
worth discussion, it's worth exploration to like dig into that.
Oh, and I also wanted to mention that at the Oscars there were protesters there for both this movie, and this was the same year as JFK, and Tommy Lee Jones, who was nominated that year, played a gay serial killer.
Really?
And yeah, JFK has a lot going on in it.
I mean, I've seen the like 7-hour film one time. Yeah. It's a lot to remember.
And so they were there to be like, gay people aren't murderers. This is, Hollywood is depicting a correlation that does not exist.
But I just don't understand. I just don't believe that the movie is saying that all gay men are serial killers.
I don't think so. Yeah.
It's this serial killer happens to be a gay man.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Buffalo Bill wasn't gay, right?
Who knows?
Well, who knows?
No, he was lovers with that guy whose head we found.
Oh,
yeah. Right.
That went right over my
head. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
There's so much.
Speaking of things I noticed for the first time, I always remember her going into the garage under the door with the jack. I always remember her finding the head. I completely forgot that there's a huge flag over an old-timey car, and inside the car there's a little diorama with a mannequin reading a family album. Right. What the hell was all of that?
It's like, what are you doing, Hannibal?
That must have been a fun day as a set.
Here are some facts half an hour later. This movie came out February 14th, 1991.
Happy birthday, Sean.
Thank you. My 6th birthday.
Oh, wow.
13
fun times.
13. Yeah, this is what we did. No. $13.7 million that first weekend. It beat the second week of Sleeping with the Enemy. Huh. And it was close. Sleeping with the Enemy made $12.8
million. That's some good shit, man. That was a good movie.
I like that movie.
I have not seen it. But from there, dominant 5 weeks as the number one movie in America.
Wow.
Beating new... It was a little weak, but there were new releases. The Doors came out. New Jack City. Class Action. There was some competition. Finally lost the top spot in week 6 to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze.
Tight.
And it was not particularly close. The Turtles made $20 million. Oh. The Lambs were down to about $6 million by then. But stayed in the top 10 for 14 weeks until April 26th. So for more than 2 months, it never dropped more than 20% from one weekend to the next.
Holy shit.
Which is remarkable hold for a movie that only started at, you know, about $14
million. Movies for grown-ups.
Movies for grown-ups. $130.7 million overall. Fourth place for 1991, behind only Terminator 2, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, and Beauty and the Beast. Four very similar films.
Yeah.
Expensive baubles.
Expensive baubles.
Okay, so this is one of the, as we discussed when we did One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, this is one of the movies that did the big five. So it got Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, Best Actress, and Best Adapted Screenplay. And how many other nominations am I trying to guess?
There were two. It lost two awards.
So it lost editing to JFK?
Correct.
Okay, that's one of the most slash least editing kind of awards.
Right.
God, one more. Production design or art direction it would have been at the time?
No.
I don't think it would be score.
No.
There's barely a score.
Oh, no. The score is omnipresent.
Like Howard really? Shore?
It's a Howard Shore score that's there all the damn time.
And
but
I
it's always
just,
don't
pay attention to it?
Here's a violin just noodling
that's
around.
That's why, yeah.
Yeah. Because he also did Seven.
Oh, is it sound?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Creepy, spooky.
Yeah.
Climbing through the storage center place kind of stuff.
But you're not going to beat what film from that year?
Terminator 2.
Terminator 2 Judgment Day took the sound award. The Golden Globes, on the other hand, were dumb about it. The only Globe this movie won was for Jodie Foster.
Oh.
Lost Best Picture to Bugsy.
Ha.
Never seen.
Warren Beatty?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fine. It is gorgeous. It is one of those movies where everything is like, holy shit, this looks awesome. Mm. The costumes are incredible, but like the story is boring.
Anthony Hopkins lost Best Actor to Nick Nolte in Prince of Tides.
What? You know, I really like that movie.
I've never seen it, but I just find it hard to believe anybody could have beat him this year.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I will say about Anthony Hopkins' Oscar here is maybe category fraud.
There's one other that's like in the 30s. This is the second least amount of screen time a best actor or actress winner has ever had. He has like 23, 24 minutes of time
that's
on screen.
That's insane. Yeah. Like, because he is what you remember.
Right, exactly. Like, at the end of the day, I'm not going to say this is category fraud because he's the most important actor in the film. Right. And the film, it's one of those best actor wins where it's like, we really fucking love this movie and it's only good because you're so good in it.
Right.
Therefore, you had an Oscar for it. I am behind that kind of Oscar.
But he has less screen time than half the cast.
Right.
Scott Glenn's definitely on screen more than him.
Yeah.
Wow. And if there's a male lead in this movie, it's probably Buffalo Bill. Either way,
he probably has about as much screen time, if not less.
I'm curious if there was a draft of this movie that had more Scott Glenn, because like Will Graham is the central character of these series, this series of books.
My least favorite IMDb trivia is that the cool thing is many of these people, including Jodie Foster and Scott Glenn, hung out at Quantico for weeks.
Awesome.
And the FBI agent that character is based on, Scott Glenn, you know, worked with him for quite some time. Mm. That's the cool part. The least favorite part is he eventually said, I just don't feel like I understand it viscerally. And the FBI agent was like, do you want to hear a recording of someone being murdered?
Oh,
because we have plenty. And Scott Glenn was like, okay. And he shut it off after 5 seconds and says he's never been the same.
Ooh. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Why would you agree that
actors are weird.
There's not that much. I'm trying to get into character.
Yeah.
No.
Robin pointed out the third film to win the Big Five. We've covered two of them this year after It Happened One Night and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And the most recent has not been repeated in the intervening 31 years.
And probably won't happen because for a long time because they're really into spreading the wealth now.
Yeah. So, I mean,
you never know. Something might come up and do it.
We have plenty of time to get into this. The Oscar season we are about to enter feels weird.
Sure.
Because no one seems to give a shit about any of the prestige Oscar buzz movies.
Right. So it's going to be similar to this kind of situation or like 96?
Maybe. You know, we could 3 months from now be like, well, it's either Top Gun, Everything Everywhere All at Once, or Knives Out 2.
Right.
Like that legitimately could happen because none of the other shit is hitting.
Right.
Gun Maverick will win 14 Oscars.
Oh my
one thing that is fascinating to me about this is you said it was released Valentine's Day. Like the Oscars
13 months later it won Best
I was
Picture.
Just gonna say I'm like back then the Oscars were deep into the spring, so like it was an old movie at that point.
Yeah.
And it beat, I mean, some of these movies we were just mentioning, I'm sure it beat JFK.
Well, that was a weird year, right? Because Beauty and the Beast was nominated for Best Picture, which had never happened before, and that was a huge surprise.
The animated?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was a huge surprise. And like I said, Bugsy is one of those movies where everybody's kind of like, okay. Prince of Tides, about, you know,
some dude dying.
It's about processing the trauma from your childhood rape.
Mm.
Yep.
Jesus.
And bad psychologist ethics, directed by a woman, so it was never going to get any traction.
Directed by a woman you may have heard of named Barbara Streisand.
Correct.
And of course, the big news, Prince of Tides. 7 Oscar nominations total, including Best Picture.
7.
But Barbara did not get a nomination for Best Director.
Long story short, I loved Prince of Tides. And to think a poor little me Skype from Brooklyn made this masterpiece, and she's not getting any recognition for it. I'm sorry, but I get a little choked up.
It's so unfair. Now I'm getting emotional. I'm a little verklempt.
So never gonna go anywhere. And JFK is bonkers in the extreme and pissed people off. So that was never gonna win anything. So like there was a path here that there wouldn't have otherwise been in a normal year.
I'm right in remembering this JFK has Kevin Costner as the main character.
Okay. Yes. And you are right that it is extremely long and it's extremely weird. And like, it was still too soon.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
it was only what?
Like 23.
It was less 25 than 20 years after he had been murdered. And like, people are sad about it.
We had our 9/11 movies in 4 years.
Right. Exactly. Okay. Right? Like, people
they almost
were like,
came out like the next weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. People were still like, oh, this horrible, horrible thing that happened.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to just.
We had COVID movies during while we were still in lockdown.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know. People found that JFK was disrespectful is my understanding of
it. Wow.
I should watch that. I should watch that the next time I have nothing to do all day and I'm very awake.
Sure.
Yeah. As we discussed last week, this is one of only 6 horror movies nominated for Best Picture, along with Get Out, Black Swan, Jaws, Sixth Sense, and The Exorcist, and it is the only winner. It is still in how many Oscars? 92?
I think we did 93 last year.
The only horror film to win. On the classic AFI 100, Silence of the Lambs was 65th. On the revised list, it dropped to 74th.
Okay.
Yeah. But they did the AFI, some dumb name about heroes and villains.
100 heroes.
It was like that, but they didn't do 100 because they did 50 heroes and 50 villains in the same special. Clarice was 5th. Hannibal Lecter won. Hannibal Lecter was the number one villain in film history, according to the American Film Institute, just ahead of Norman Bates. So Ed Gein, man, what a career he had. Norman Bates, Darth Vader, The Wicked Witch, and an overranking Nurse Ratched at 5.
You know what?
This poor woman.
She's just trying to do her job.
Right? I am.
Didn't she just pass, she by did. The way, in yes. between our episode and now? Speaking of famous people dying, you might have missed all of this because as I was sitting here earlier before you arrived, Kevin Conroy died.
Yeah.
The Batman voice guy.
Oh, shame.
And then when I left for half an hour, I got a notification that Gallagher died.
What?
We are gearing up for the weirdest 3 in history.
Oh, yeah. My goodness.
I kind of thought Gallagher was already dead.
He nearly died 10 years ago.
But okay.
Hung around
well,
for a while.
Rest in peace.
Just a few more things. Jodie Foster was way down the list in preparing this.
I know they wanted Michelle Pfeiffer.
That was the first choice.
Which makes sense.
Mm. He aggressively pursued Michelle Pfeiffer for the role. Depending on whether who you want to believe, either she wasn't comfortable with the subject matter or she wanted too much money. One or both of the two. Meg Ryan was 2nd, definitely uncomfortable with the subject matter. That would not have worked.
No.
Even Michelle, I think she could have pulled it off, but that's a stretch.
I think she could have done it. I don't think that she could have done it as well as Jodie Foster, which is, a really high bar.
You know who could have probably is Laura Dern, who Jonathan Demme went to next.
Wasn't she like 18?
No, she's... Blue Velvet was like 5 or 6 years earlier
than this.
Wasn't
she like 18?
We'll check Laura Dern's age later.
I just know she was Miss Golden Globe like in the mid-80s, so...
Demme was really interested in her. The studio didn't think she could... She was a big enough star.
Wow, so that would have been good.
But Jodie Foster really wanted it. Jodie Foster tried to buy the book rights so that she could get it for herself. And
respect
it,
the hustle.
It all worked out. Right. The first choice for Hannibal Lecter, Sean Connery. That's not going to work.
Nope.
No disrespect. I mean, some disrespect. He was an asshole. But, like, I understand he was a big star. He could do a lot of things. He couldn't have done this.
With fava beans in a concert.
Hello, Clarice.
Sean, do you have any information on Manhunter, which is the previous Hannibal Lecter movie? Like, is there any...
I know we said we were watching. I did not watch it.
No, I didn't either.
Still
sorry.
Watch it. It's still really good. Great legs. Brian Cox plays Hannibal Lecter mm-hmm. in that movie, and he's great. Very different take on the character. Still extremely compelling. Will Graham is the main character, played by the guy from CSI, whose name is escaping me right now. But my question is, so you don't know if they're, like, is there even a producer? Like, is there any attachment between this production and that one?
No, Dino De Laurentiis was the producer on Manhunter. It didn't make money. He gave them the film rights for free.
Oh, wow.
Because did he come back for the other ones, though?
He might have had his name on the other stuff.
That sounds right to me.
And it might have been the circumstances around that. Like, sure, you can remake that story again, but technically he owned the character rights or something like that. But, yeah, Manhunter, you know, just didn't make a lot of money, so Dino had become convinced that this was not marketable, so handed it over. It was the book rights that I think Gene Hackman owned them first.
I was going to say, I know there's some divorce of rights between the book Silence of the Lambs and the character Hannibal, because the TV series Hannibal was not allowed to have a Clarice Starling.
And the Clarice isn't allowed to have a Hannibal.
Right.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Clarice. Did you watch the series Hannibal?
Oh, yeah.
I loved that show.
Oh, my God.
I was forbidden to watch the final season because I was getting too upset every episode. Great show.
It was so beautiful.
And, again, Mads Mikkelsen, different take on the character. Yeah.
My only gripe is that I barely understood what Mads was saying.
Yes.
What? You're going to do what?
He's going to eat the rude.
I'm sure the stories are similar. Technically, Manhunter and Silence of the Lambs are different novels.
Right. Okay. Manhunter is based on Red Dragon.
Right. Yeah. Right. So Gene Hackman bought the rights to the Silence of the Lambs novel. Dino De Laurentiis retained the rights to Hannibal Lecter, the character, and handed those over for free because he didn't think it would go anywhere.
I see.
Gene Hackman bought it because he wanted to play the FBI agent.
Will Graham.
And it just didn't go that way.
Interesting.
Yeah. I wonder how these things come up. Like, is there just like a notification like, hey, the rights to Hannibal Lecter are up for sale?
I mean, I know.
Or someone's just like, you know what I want?
I know I've seen in Hollywood Reporter like a little square and it's like new property alert. And it's like a little paragraph about a book that would make a good movie that hasn't been bought yet. You know?
Okay.
So industry stuff. 50 people say that they also were considered for Hannibal Lecter. It's one of those.
Oh, yeah. You were all at Woodstock, too.
Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, Dustin Hoffman, Derek Jacobi, Daniel Day-Lewis, and Forrest Whitaker have all been mentioned.
Forrest Whitaker is Hannibal Lecter. I think he's lying.
Because there was that list, and then there was a new sentence on Wikipedia. Forrest Whitaker also says he auditioned for the role.
Forrest,
sure you did.
Forrest, stop fucking around on Wikipedia.
And finally, I mean, listen, there are whole books about this movie that I'm not going to get into the deep trivia, but depending on who you check with, Anthony Hopkins' inspirations were HAL 9000 in 2001.
Very good.
The cadence, but not the voice of Truman Capote.
Okay.
And reptiles. He talked a lot about how reptiles only blink when they want to and just have a very still stare.
That's fucking effective.
He does not blink.
That's one of the things that makes him creepy to me is that he never fucking breaks eye contact.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like he's just really there deep in your soul and it's like, sir, can you please get out of my brain?
So I like this movie a lot.
Me too.
You know, we talked earlier about how the story is almost incidental because every scene is an unforgettable triumph of filmmaking. Right. You know? Like, we barely even mentioned the entire sequence in the cage.
Right.
And Chris Isaac and the face eaten.
I forgot that was Chris Isaac. Yeah. I was surprised.
What I really like about the movie is that we don't, other films would have like, or could have given us flashbacks of Hannibal's horrors.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
As we're leading up to it. But we don't get to see him in action until like over an hour into the movie.
You're so right.
And it's like, oh, okay. Now I see. All right. And it's like, and that's when the shit is like, all right, now we're up. Now we're going.
But how perfectly do they tease that with the shot of Jodie Foster staring at the picture of one of his victims?
Right. Yeah.
And being told, but we're like,
right, exactly.
What like, even happened?
Right. Yeah. They tell us all over the place. Like everybody's talking about it. Like, you know, he was bad boy. He did this, that, the other. But, you know, we don't see it until he gets up in there. And even then, like when he is chewing the man's And then also when he's like beating the dude with the billy club, like, and they talked about how his heart rate never went above whatever, mm-hmm. and you mm-hmm. see that, and, it, mm-hmm. and
he's just like, just doing my little murder thing.
You know, no big. And then he chills and finishes listening to the sonata, whatever he was listening to after it's all done. He's just like, all right, taking it all in, breathing out. All right, let's get to it.
Mm-hmm. I have questions for the paramedics. Who wheel him out of there wearing the guy's face and are like, we are treating this man.
Not very good paramedics.
Right, exactly. Anyway.
It's like nobody dabbed or wanted to right. look at.
I mean, closely. I wouldn't want to look at it. Yeah. Let's be real.
But yeah, that's, and that reveal too. Yeah. That's a fucking, that's a stunner.
The scene when they're in the elevator and they see the blood growing and just they're like pointing their guns at the blood stain in the elevator. Like, well, what do we do now? Is very... It's just every like you. What did you say? Every scene is a triumph of unforgettable filmmaking.
Right.
Yeah.
Mary Beth always says people, you know, think of Silence of the Lambs and hear Goodbye Horses in their head, the song that he dances mm-hmm. to. And she says, no, I think of American Girl because I can't get her driving down singing American Girl.
I wonder if that is a gender divide thing because I feel like that. Does that scene resonate with you?
No.
Okay. Maybe it's a white girl thing.
I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, no, it doesn't. I had forgotten about it until I recently watched it. Maybe it's the song. Maybe. I mean, I can, you know, absolutely, you know, identify with singing my little heart out in the car by myself. But yeah, that song. And
to me, that's very like, oh God, this could happen to me. That's one of those.
There are so many scenes like that, that this 2-hour movie feels like it lasts for 45 minutes because every scene you're like, oh my God, this is going, what? She's either talking to Hannibal or something horrifying is happening with Buffalo Bill. The scenes that are like business are so quick.
Yeah.
You know? And I really love how quickly we set up. This doesn't set up a franchise. This does not set up a series. This does not set up a story. The opening scenes of this movie set up this movie in a way that we've kind of lost the ability to do.
Right.
Where she's running and we bring her in and we have a little conversation and she's with Hannibal in like 12 minutes.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
I do think that's part of the reason why people are like, wait a second, this is the second Hannibal Lecter movie? Because it does feel very self-contained. And because the movie Hannibal was so cash-grabby in so many ways.
Like Julianne Moore.
Yeah. And anyway, regardless, also, I do want to take a moment to say that Catherine is that bitch, and I love her, the victim.
Oh, yeah.
She is just...
I really love that actress.
What else is she in?
Most recently, like she's always
one of those people who just shows up.
Yeah, but like
in
most
things.
Recently, she was being like a badass on the show Big Sky.
That sounds like exactly the right thing for her to do. She just is so like mean in a great way. Mm-hmm. Like she's when she tells Jodie Foster, "Don't you leave me, you bitch." I was just like, I was like, I find this
that resonates with me.
Yes. Like, because truly, if I were in the bottom of a well and the cops showed up, I would be like, do not fuck this up for me.
Someone somewhere pointed out that the dog barking is like the lamb screaming. Like, she hasn't found him, so she hasn't silenced the lambs, and he's a little white fluffy dog like a sheep.
That's who I feel most sad for.
Yeah. I mean,
Precious.
I love when Catherine steals that dog. She's smart.
The bedrooms at Buffalo Bill's house are the Hannibal room is the master suite, the Buffalo Bill room, the Clarice room, and the Precious room. And the Precious room is the one with like two little twin beds in case you brought your kids.
Why would you bring your kid?
While we're here, if you live in the Pittsburgh area, get some friends together and spend a weekend at Buffalo Bill's house. It's like an hour south of town, and every room is covered in Silence of the Lambs stuff and not like a poster, like beautiful fan art and framed death head moths and like all of this great stuff. The whole sequence at his house, everything outside and around it and until he runs into the basement was filmed in that house. Okay. So you will clearly recognize it if you've seen the movie recently. The basement was a set. They weren't taking that for an answer, so they redid one part of the basement to look like the sewing area, and Goodbye Horses starts playing as soon as you turn the lights on. It's just on a timer, and the disco ball starts going. Since we stayed there, they finished the well. They dug a little well, so you can do those photo opportunities, too.
Like, go in it?
Yeah, it's not deep. If there had not been a single bit of Silence of the Lambs in this house, I would have been like, what a great, lovely house to spend the weekend in. It's just like this awesome vacation rental with a fire pit and a pool. There's a train car out back for some reason. It's right on a trail. You know, it's just like we just had a great time. And every now and then would go like, let's take pictures like we're in Silence of the Lambs.
So you rent the whole house.
You rent the whole house, but you rent it for the whole weekend. They do tours, too, if you're passing through and you want to see it. But look up Buffalo Bill's house. You know, there's plenty of filming locations, but none that are like, this is mine for the weekend.
Right.
That's very cool.
Pittsburgh ties, the guy whose face gets eaten, an acting professor at Pitt.
Oh, really?
Yes.
And George Romero's in there. I'm always like, where is he? And I can't quite see him.
I have no idea.
But
I think he's milling around Buffalo Bill's house at the end when all the cops are there. Mm-hmm. And
that was just a like, ha, make it a horror movie in Pittsburgh. You want to come hang out? And he's like, sure.
Yeah, they felt like they had to. And
good for them. I'm glad they did, right?
Anything else about this pillar of cinema?
I just have one. I don't. Mm-hmm. We probably don't have time for this, but like, is this real? By which I mean forensic psychology. Has that been like dismantled as a field yet? Because it seems made
forensic psychology.
Yeah, where she's like, well, based on the vibes of what serial killers are, I can make a profile as to who this person is.
No, they're called profilers now.
Right, but is that real?
I'm pretty
sure it does work.
Yeah.
Does it work or do these people get, are there people who get paid for this?
So I know it's real in that there are people who get paid to do it. And I know that they helped contribute to this film and everything, but it seems fake.
I feel like it works.
Okay.
I feel like it has the opportunity to work. I'm not saying it's like foolproof.
Right.
And it's not voodoo and it's not, you know, it's not an exact science because, you know, you can't just pinpoint all these little characteristics on one person. Like, this is who you are. But I believe that it has the capability of serving a purpose like that amongst other good police work.
That is, I was going to say, one thing I really do like about this movie is that Jodie Foster is a good police person. Like, she does the actual police work of going to that diner and being like, hi, do you know this person? And that is actually what causes her success at the end of the day.
Right.
So I'm
glad
that that's there instead of Hannibal Lecter being like, I left a anagram with a map to the Resolute desk.
I agree with Camila. I bet this is a real thing. I bet people know how to do this. Also, though, like, you can guess pretty. I bet you it's going to be a white male between 25 and 50, kind of big enough to carry someone around, bit of a loner, you know, not unattractive, but it has something kind of weird about his head. Like, that's all of them. That's every single one.
Right.
So you could do 80% of that report knowing nothing,
right,
and then just pepper in a few details.
It's like, oh, I feel like green's his favorite color.
Yeah.
And the thing we saw Ted Levine in already, wasn't it American Gangster?
Yes, that sounds.
He was one of Russell. He was in Russell's movie.
Yeah,
I thought he was. he was the guy that Russell kept reporting back to.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you for remembering that.
Yeah. Seriously.
The trailer. Ooh, this is a good one.
You spook easily, Starling.
Not yet, sir.
He's past the others. The last cell. I'll be watching. You'll do fine.
A killer is on the loose.
Keeps them alive for 3 days. Then he shoots them, skins them, and dumps them.
A rookie FBI agent is on his trail.
He's got real physical strength, cautious, precise, and he's never impulsive. He'll never stop.
But in order to track him down, she'll have to match wits.
I'll help you catch him, Clary.
Believe me, you don't want Hannibal Lecter inside your head.
With the darkest of all minds.
Just do your job, but never forget what he is.
But he's a monster. Pure psychopath. So rare to capture one alive.
So close to the way you're gonna catch him, do you realize that?
Oh, Clarice, your problem is you need to get more fun out of life.
You told me you don't spook easily.
You call this easy, sir?
Lecter's missing hand arm.
Man's a raving maniac. Who knows what he'll do?
Thank you, Clary. Thank you.
One thing I was going to say about this movie is that it doesn't feel 30 years old. This trailer feels 30 years old.
Yes.
It does, but it's still effective.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
But I'm like, oh, this movie came out in 1991.
Do we still have the movie guy?
Like is that man still with us?
Well, I guess, is that man still with us? One. And two, do movie trailer? Because I
never.
Yeah, is our movie trailer
it's
still?
It's incredibly rare now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it possible it's because that man died?
It's, to the Google.
There were like two with very
Him and somebody else. With
one of them
voice.
Was Don LaFontaine.
Ooh.
I love that you know that.
Because there was some show, I forget what it was. There was some like Rescue 911 or America's Most, like one of those where at the end it's a, if you do it, call 1-800, this is Don LaFontaine. And it just always stuck because that's a hell of a name,
right,
too.
Yeah.
Yes.
He was the In a World guy, and he died in 2008, so probably had something to do with it. That's a great trailer, though.
Yeah,
that is an excellent.
I agree.
That is promising me a good time at the movies, and then I would have gone and had an even better time.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Letterboxd 2 weeks in a row that the film in question appeared on the Letterboxd 250. This one much higher, 65th overall on Letterboxd as of last night. And the list is films containing a scene where a charming psychopath dances to an incongruously upbeat song whilst committing violent acts.
Mm. What else is on there?
American Psycho, Reservoir Dogs, Clockwork Orange, Blue Velvet. Others. Yeah, I guess that's a thing that happens in movies.
Yeah. Talk about a trope. So I'll put that on the next bingo card.
Ooh. Yeah.
Speaking of bingo cards.
I'm disqualifying myself because Camila kindly printed them out last time and I have no idea where it is. So just, I can't win this one for rudeness.
Rudeness. I don't think they're...
So I want to make an argument for Don't You Leave Me.
Oh, yeah, she said...
Right,
yeah.
Now
yeah.
I know that you meant it as, like, encouraging someone to not die.
No, in any way, those words were
great.
Said.
Okay.
Yeah. I will also take Police Interrogation.
Great.
Sure.
I want to say that Hannibal was catching a train at the end, or was he...
No, he just wanders off.
Town square.
Right, he was in some island in the Bahamas, so probably didn't even have a train.
And the jerk prison... Warden was also there.
Ah, that's right. Yeah,
he's going to eat that guy. That guy got off a plane. That's what you're
that's
thinking.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
I was always a little bit confused about, is that guy on vacation or is he hiding out because he's done a poor job? Because he looks nervous when he arrives at the end.
Probably hiding out.
Yeah,
because he it's that Simpsons scene where Chief Wiggum's like, "Yeah, I've been starving the dogs, singing off key." It's like, oh no, the guy who I tortured for years and likes to eat people is free now.
I think that's it.
So how to? Yes, there are problems. On the other hand, it's the Silence of the Lambs. So
it's Hannibal Lecter, it's Sir Anthony Hopkins.
I think 93. I think I would go to 93. Nobody else wants to say a number.
I'm going to go with the number that I came in with, which is 87.
Okay.
I'm going with 94.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because, you know, I do have questions about the problematics of it. It was something I will dive into later in my spare time. And also, I've never been comfortable with Jodie Foster's performance in this movie.
Oh, really?
Whoa!
Yeah.
Burying the lead.
I know, right? Explain discomfort.
Oh, just her discomfort makes me laugh.
Yeah.
I understand that's part of who Clarice Starling is, you know, obviously a young thing, right? Not even out of the academy yet. But there's just too many ticks.
Mm.
Like, I feel like she's kind of overdoing it. She's overselling
this
you know, deer in headlights kind of thing. And it could also just be the way that Jodie Foster talks. But I always, whenever she's on screen, especially when she's up against Hannibal, I'm always just like, we could be doing better.
Can we think this through a little more?
A little less breathy.
Nevertheless, 91 and a third. So immediate revision to that top 10 I gave you a little while ago. This is now our number one movie in America.
Wow.
Behind only Get Out and Fight Club. coming in ahead of Alien. Those are just we've got two movies in the 90s in as many episodes, and we've only ever had three. We did the bingo card, we did all of that. That means it's you can't handle the truth. So, are we here to talk about Black Panther?
I saw it last night.
I did not see Black Panther. Please feel free to have a conversation about it. That is relatively non-spoilery.
I mean, there's only so much. I can't say a lot about
Chadwick Boseman isn't in it.
That's a shocking.
Uh-huh. Angela Bassett is Angela Bassetting all over the fucking screen, and I'm here for every second of it.
Oh, she's so good.
I'm so excited for that.
And oh my God.
Every appearance of the top of her head is powerful. She cycles between a few hairstyles and a variety of hats, and right. each one of them is like, there's a lot of authority in that voice.
Yeah, I love the fact that they gave Angela so much more to do in this one mm-hmm. as opposed to the first one. And mm-hmm. also just the fact that women are basically taking the lead in everything. Mm-hmm. They're the leaders. This is black girl magic, black girl empowerment, black girl joy, mm-hmm. black girl fucking sadness, grief, joy, growth, whatever. It's all there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also very emotional. I was
my God.
10 minutes in. I was like, okay, so we're doing this right away, huh?
Yeah.
All right, fine.
The opening logo, right?
Yeah, fuck you.
Oh my
God. Fuck you, Marvel.
I get it, but there's a little preview for you. The thing that makes this so good, aside from, it'd be a much longer conversation to decide if the first Black Panther or if this series is the best superhero brand ever. It's very close if it isn't. But aside from how ridiculously artful everything is, all of the production design, art design, and just the like Shakespearean grandeur of these stories. What really makes this one work is that it isn't just like we acknowledge our grief and then get to our superhero business. That grief informs everything that happens in the story.
It is the thread that is just everything that's in there, and it's not in a sappy, make everybody depressed kind of way. It's just, it works and it enriches the story.
Yeah.
Very much so. My only gripe, or not even a gripe, just kind of like an itch, is that, sequels were usually, mm-hmm. we've got our characters established, we kind of get right into it. Like this one, we're like introducing a whole new ass character. And there was like a lot of exposition about who he was.
Namor?
Yeah. Which I don't mind.
And I thought you were talking about Riri, who is another new whole ass character.
Which...
Yeah, she's great. Yeah, she's excellent.
I love her. But we didn't spend that much time on. They told us who she was in a quick and meaning in a.
Was she in one of the series?
No, I think she's new.
Okay.
She was in If Beale Street Could Talk.
I meant the character.
Oh, the actress.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I was fine with that because I thought that the Namor setting was so good that anytime we went back, I was like, cool, I got to look at this stuff again.
Yeah, it was an awesome world. I think also I was just problematic. I saw it in 3D and it was so unnecessary.
No, especially you're going to have a headache by the end of two hours and 40 minutes. The only reason that this, that the original was a 10 and this is a 9 for me is, the Marvel stuff, I was like, I don't care at all.
I was really like, one of the first tweets I saw today was Camila's like, yay for Angela Bassett tweet. And I was like, phew.
Yeah.
Because I've seen a bunch of like, sorry, Wakanda Forever, but I am so burnt out on Marvel that I can't get into this movie. And I'm burnt out on Marvel, so I'm like, I don't want to have that experience.
No, well, I mean, in 2 hours and 40 minutes, it's 20 of them max. But other than that, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to see.
Like, literally, it did give me everything I wanted. Like, I went in there and I made it. Like, shout out to my friend Chris Ivy, who bought a bunch of us tickets to go see it last night just because I wasn't, I wasn't certain if I was ready to go do that, but I knew very well that I needed to. And it was something that I needed to happen. And going in, it was everything that I wanted.
Yeah.
And it gave me specifically something that I wanted, but didn't know I wanted it in this way. So it was even better. So
I'm so glad you had a nice experience.
I did.
Anything else you saw? I mean, that's kind of the headline, but.
Yeah, I saw Don't Worry, Darling.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to talk about Don't Worry, Darling. And we're firmly in spoiler country here, folks.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If you care.
I mean, it's streaming on HBO now.
Go watch it on HBO.
Right.
But a couple weeks ago, remember when you were like, isn't there a recent movie that people were comparing to Get Out? And I was like, yes, there was. And it was Don't Worry, Darling.
Oh.
And the thing is, Camila texted us, 20 minutes in?
Yeah,
and,
like not even.
Yeah, it was like, is this The Village? And I was like, more or less. And I wanted y'all to know that when I was doing my elaborate PowerPoint presentation on the backstage drama, which we did as part of a comedy show, I watched the trailer enough times that I went, this is the village. Because she's wearing vamp nail polish, right. And they're listening to music from the 60s, right. But the decor and the costumes is from the 50s, and exactly. It's and the makeup's from the 40s, and it's like, either this is very poorly done, mm-hmm. Or it's poorly done in a different way, and that they're right. Being sloppy with their clues.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember when I was watching the movie, when I realized that it wasn't corporeal, that they were like in a simulation,
yeah.
Was when she chases after the airplane, mm-hmm. And she walks in the sun in a netting top dress,
mm-hmm.
And then doesn't have a netting shaped sunburn. I was like, okay, so this is not the physical world.
Wow. Well,
yeah.
It's pretty good.
Good clues. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so many questions. Like, towards the end where they're showing them in the real world,
mm-hmm.
I was so confused because I thought, is this the dude from Stranger Things now? And that's mm-hmm. not Harry Styles anymore? Mm-hmm. Because he looks, like, scraggly. He looks a lot like right. the brother, whatever.
Yeah.
But also, like, great idea.
Mm-hmm.
We should have spent more time exploring that, like,
right.
That last 10 minutes that we, like, the,
yes.
That's what I would, that's so, the story I want to know.
Sean told me that the original draft written by Dick Van Dyke's grandchildren,
mm-hmm.
She finds out on page 20.
Yeah, she figures it out almost immediately.
Okay, see? Yeah. That's so, the story.
Because,
but no, we're just going to have cunnilingus in the 60s for an hour right. and a half and dinner parties and fucking.
And when you were talking about that scene in Get Out where they laugh at him, Florence Pugh wakes up in her little mosquito net of
mm-hmm.
Jordan Peterson hypnotism.
Mm-hmm.
And then what is she going to do? Go down the street and be like, my dead boyfriend has kidnapped my brain for the last X period of time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, who's going to believe her?
Right.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
it's just all, and it all just fell apart. At
yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. Not that it was held together well in the first place. It was all just like this elaborate foreplay of something.
And it doesn't make any sense. They depict her having memories of things that she wasn't there for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it's just very poorly done in so many ways. And it is disappointing because, like, the bones were there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Florence Pugh is trying so hard.
God bless her.
She's because, trying like, so goddamn hard.
Right. Because I give my hats off to her. Like, mm-hmm. I'm starting to really like her
yeah.
as an actress. I mean, not start, but yes. I'm starting to see, like, yes, she's got
she's
it.
Special.
Yeah, she's got something there.
Harry Styles.
Why did they make Harry Styles the incel version American? Why? No. Why? And then when he gets mad back in the simulation, he should lose his accent. And
yeah.
It's so obvious.
Yeah. And I just know I was still confused as to, like, really? Shia LaBeouf was going to play this role?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I couldn't see it. I also saw Run, Sweetheart, Run.
How's that?
What's that?
It's a horror movie. It's a horror okay. movie. This girl goes on supposedly like a work thing. Like, her boss tells her to go have dinner with this client. She does. He's charming. He's awesome. She gets all, things get flirty and they go on a date. And then, like, she goes back to his house for a nightcap and then shit goes south real fast. I don't think I enjoyed, like, I enjoyed aspects yeah. of the filmmaking. I don't think I liked the story so much.
Okay.
They were really heavy handed with the, you know, it was really, really trying to hit you over the head with, like, look out, ladies, for on those dates, mm-hmm. blind dates.
Don't listen to Tom Petty too loud.
Right, yeah, right. Just, you know, men aren't safe. And, you know, it's
yeah.
just like, no one's going to help you. And it's, I got, yeah, we've been existing. We know, we got yeah. it. Thanks.
Yeah, and Fresh was this year. We just did
right,
this.
Yeah.
And it went somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So this was just like, you know, and it also just ends up with, like, this, it goes into a supernatural lane. And,
what?
Yeah, they didn't know what they wanted to be.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot.
That's how this ended up as a Prime Video exclusive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They do some filmmaking choices, like a lot of the horror is not shown on camera, which I appreciate. And I also think it has something to do with budgetary reasons. But,
yeah.
you know, they worked around it in a creative way, and I enjoyed it. And yeah. there's also a couple things like breaking the fourth wall, which was done in a smart way. But other than that, it's worth a curiosity, a morbid curiosity.
Robin?
I also wanted to say Crimes of the Future rules.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I loved
Still
it.
Still got to watch.
And I won't say anything else because I feel like it just, Sean, you got to watch it, and then we can talk about it. For some reason, when I watched it, I thought that I went, I know that when I went on Letterboxd and looked at the people I follow, I saw a lot of like 2.5-star reviews, and I was like, this can't be right. And I attributed one of them to Sean. And so when I saw Sean next, I was like, why didn't you like Crimes of the Future? And he was like, what? I haven't seen it. So I don't know why
Very
people
confusing.
Don't like it. I do think it probably works better at home than it did in the movie theater because it's fucking gross. And yeah. you can, you know, escape it a little bit in your house with the lights on. But yeah, loved it.
David Cronenberg, still making people uncomfortable.
Yep. Oh, wow.
After all these years. How did the rest of your time with Freddy?
Where did we leave off?
Had watched the first three, okay, and Letterboxd tells me you picked and chose from there.
Yes, from there I watched Freddy's Dead, terrible. I watched part of another. Listen, I watched two bad ones, then I watched New Nightmare, which I liked because I love Heather Langenkamp. I'm a Heather Langenkamp super fan. Mm-hmm. Then I watched Freddy vs. Jason on Halloween, which is very bad, but like...
in a fun way?
I had a great time watching it. Exactly.
Like, see, what happens is Freddy fights Jason. So as long as we get to that.
Like, it truly is just so fucking goofy in a way that like you just can't help but enjoy.
I know that the Nightmare on Elm Street series frequently has shifting rules of reality. They don't last 20 minutes in Freddy versus Jason, because I just saw the epic drive-in double feature of Freddy versus Jason and 13 Ghosts, which just a nice early 2000s time.
Yeah,
really, the cast in 13 Ghosts: F. Murray Abraham, Monk, Raw Digga, Matt Lillard, and
Alba?
Shannon Elizabeth.
Yeah. Shannon Elizabeth.
Oh,
right.
My God. Anyway, every minute, Freddy's like, I'll go to the real world. Now I'm out of the real world. Now I'm in a dream. Now I'm in. Now I'm possessing someone.
Happening because he has a plan. He's like, here's my plan, audience. But his plan is nonsense.
Which he addresses to the audience.
Yes, it's nonsense.
Jason doesn't sleep.
Jason at this point is in hell because of Jason Goes to Hell.
Yes.
So, but Freddy apparently has the ability to remove Jason from hell.
Okay. It also kind of feels like a tortoise in the hare kind of thing.
Yes. I was going to say, I think I tweeted something like, this movie for most of its runtime is Freddy feet Jason.
Yeah.
Where he's like, hi, everybody. I'm going to have this guy do the hard work for me. I'm busy. I'm tired. Put my name on the track, but he's going to do the hook.
It's pretty dumb, and the acting is bad. Kelly Rowland's career did not take off from there.
Bless her heart.
She's fine.
When Jason knocks out that cornfield rave, man, does that work. And when they fight in the end in the giant industrial construction site, that's at Camp Crystal Lake for some reason.
You know what? I grew up in New Jersey. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Freddy starts firing the compressed air at him like he's Jaws. Bad movie. Watch it.
Very fun. And we hated Armageddon Time.
Robin and I both saw Armageddon Time.
To be fair, while we were watching Armageddon Time, we were like, okay. Mm-hmm. What? Really?
Culminating in the main character smiling, turning, and walking away as if to say, this didn't add up to much, did it? Well, I'm going home. And boy, did that not land at all. That opened in 13th. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. None of these, you know, here's the big... I mean, I guess Spielberg's thing will probably be different.
Maybe. We'll see. Tony Hopkins, very good in Armageddon.
Yes. Yeah. It's weird to see him in a new thing and think, man, what a great performance. 31 years after Silence of the Lambs, when he already wasn't old, but looked old.
Yeah.
I mean, he was in his 50s.
Was he?
He's in his 80s now. This was 30 years ago. Wow.
Other things I watched. So The Banshees of Inisherin, speaking of Oscar movies that
Colin.
People aren't really seeing. This is excellent. Such a great script. Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson are fantastic. The cinematography and the pictures of Ireland, and it's not even, you know, the mainland. It really resonated with me because it's entirely filmed on a tiny island that I've been to multiple times.
Oh, cool.
You know, long before this movie, I would be like, the most beautiful place I've ever seen in my life is Inishmore off the coast of Ireland, and this is filmed there. Yeah. It's so good. It is one of the most depressing movies I've ever seen in my life. It did to me what Monster did when at the end of it, I was like, I don't even feel like standing up because I don't want to go on with my life after this. It's so good, but who am I recommending it to? I mean, if you love this guy's plays, this is closer to one of his plays than that Martin McDonagh did in Bruges and did Three Billboards. This is closer to his plays. He was, there's some weird stat that Martin McDonagh was the first playwright to have three plays running simultaneously in the West End since Shakespeare.
Wow.
Yeah.
Why do I know that?
People say it about him.
That's, I mean, I feel like that's the kind of thing that once you hear it, you're like, holy shit, taking that to the bank.
Right.
And this is better. This is a much better script than his other movies. It is as good as his best. I've been a fan of him for a very long time.
I really like him, Bruce. It's a nice Christmas movie.
It is a nice Christmas movie. With Colin Farrell and
Brandon Gleeson.
It's the same crew, right?
Yeah.
Except for Ralph Fiennes. Ralph Fiennes is great in Bruges. He's not in this movie. There's so much in Bruges. Whenever anyone mentions it, all I picture is Ralph Fiennes smashing a telephone, his wife saying, "It's an inanimate fucking object," and him yelling,
"You're an inanimate fucking object!"
Anyway. Because I respond to dry Irish snarkiness, for an hour, I was laughing in the theater, and by the end, I was like, man, unchecked mental illness really is devastating and leads to real world violence if not treated. Wow. It's a hell of a time. Can I say something cheerier before we go? We already talked about Black Panther. I watched the Inuyuritu thing. Nobody cares.
I forgot that there was one.
The what?
Inuyuritu, who hasn't done anything since The Revenant, but also did Babel and Birdman.
Oh.
Has a movie called Bardo, False Chronicle of a Handful of Truths. That's kind of about him. It's spoilers. I hate to give away a movie that no one has seen yet. It does
Thank you. I think you've done a service to too.
It's 2 hours and 40 minutes of like good filmmaking that is really like very like disconnected and like, you know, just kind of floating. And some of the scenes make sense, some of them don't. And you're just sitting there like, what?
I hate them.
What is it? And then it's like, oh, okay.
Is this movie that I'm going to have to watch?
Maybe. It's one of Netflix's big awards plays.
Netflix, don't worry about that.
I still gave it an 8. Who knows? You know, it's a weird, these movies are weird. I guess I'll talk about Dear Zoe because it was made in Pittsburgh. Mm. It's also very sad, but it's one of those cathartic cry movies. Mm. There's a poor girl. She's lost her little sister in an accident and she's trying to deal with it. And she goes to live with her dad on the wrong side of the tracks and learns life lessons. And it's one of those movies that is very sad, but you'll feel nice that you went
at the end.
You'll feel good at the end. And it was made in Pittsburgh. She works at Kennywood. Her dad lives in Braddock. They go to the Steelers tailgate. It's very Pittsburgh-y with a lot of local crew and a lot of people involved. It's based on a book by a local author. Oh, cool. I was at the premiere and I had a full 90 seconds on the red carpet with Sadie Sink from Stranger Things, and nice. She cool. was nice, which is nothing because Camila just talked to Chaz Palminteri.
Chaz motherfucking Palminteri.
And how was our Academy Award nominee, Chaz Palminteri?
Oh my God. Chaz is great. But seriously, like, he's coming to Pittsburgh this weekend, November 10th, 11th, 12th, to do his one-man show, A Bronx Tale, and, you know, which the movie from 91, 92? I don't know.
Was great movie.
Based on what, phenomenal movie. And I'm excited to go see the play and the one man show and see what that's about. But I was super stoked. Talked to Chaz for City Paper and he was delightful. Just everything. I was calling him Uncle Chaz by the end of it. Which is great.
That's really become a franchise because there's a musical too. Like he eventually turned it into a musical.
Yeah, and there's like a book about the musical or something as well. So like he's really like find it, man. Like find it. Mm-hmm.
Good for him.
Yep, that's what basically like made his career, like put him on the map. Because like I think the first thing, which I forgot to mention, was that I saw him like before he was Chaz Palminteri. He was like one of the goons in The Last Dragon. And so I also have that connection because I interviewed Timok from Last Dragon as well. So
there you go.
You're just working your way through The Last Dragon.
Apparently, but you know, half of them are dead.
I was just going to say the surviving Last Dragon.
I'd like to move along to Timothy Oliphant.
Remember that time that we had a conversation about The Last Dragon on this show when I thought you were talking about The Last Unicorn?
Yeah.
Don't think I've seen The Last Dragon. So
I haven't seen The Last Dragon either.
What is, you know what?
Yeah. Feels like the show is over.
Moving on.
Yes.
Well, let's not draw a movie.
That's right.
Robin, tell us why.
Because we auctioned off a guest appearance on this show to support Arcade Comedy Theater, Pittsburgh's home for all things comedy. And my friend Jim Kiley graciously donated to Arcade and won this auction. And he will be joining us for our next episode to talk about.
Thanks, Jim.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
There we go.
Ooh.
That'll do nicely.
Is this the first one, right?
The first one.
Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Camila, have you seen it?
Probably.
Okay.
It's hard to avoid.
Yeah, I think, actually, I think there was a moment where I was trying to work my way through all of them, mm-hmm. and I got to the almost the second to the last one, and someone was like, it has space, and it's about space, and I'm like, never mind, and I stopped there.
Good choice. I keep looking for, like, do you have an Indiana Jones Blu-ray set that does not have the last one? Can we get one of those? One of my favorite movies. I mean, I've never compiled a list of these are my favorite movies that did not have Raiders of the Lost Ark in it.
Yeah.
So
also, it means we're doing 3 Best Picture nominees in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And 3 movies I own a Blu-ray copy of in a row.
Look at you.
So look at
saving
that.
Cash.
Mm-hmm. Well, that'll be, I'd love to talk to Jim. Very funny guy. Glad he won the auction, and love to hear about why he picked Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
Love to watch Raiders of the Lost Ark. Love in the great movie ride in Disney World where they're lifting the Ark up. That's one of the highlights. May it rest in peace.
Yes, was one of the highlights.
Was one of the highlights. And that's next time. And then after that.
Snowy season.
Holiday stuff.
Yeah.
We're doing this differently. The last 2 years we did like a double feature,
so
right?
So we used to have this rule where we have a list of Christmas movies that aren't really Christmas movies, but they occur in Christmas. And if we drew one of those, we'd have to draw a real Christmas movie. But we have too few movies left.
Yeah.
So that we're just drawing from the Christmas movie pile.
Yes.
If it is a Batman Returns type movie where it occurs at Christmas time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's on the list. It's good enough.
But we'll do 2 of them.
Yes, but we will do 2 of them.
Okay. That'll be after Raiders. Before we get there, Silence of the Lambs, my 6th birthday, February 14th, 1991. What was the number one song in America? Would you like me to come up with some anagrams or loudly say something?
Say Mariah Carey.
No. This is a little early, isn't it?
I mean.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Color Me Bad.
Ooh.
No.
Madonna.
Mm-mm.
Amy Grant.
No. More of a one-hit wonder.
EMF, Unbelievable.
Ooh.
No. What did you say, Camila?
Aini Kamoze. I think that's...
Hot Stepper?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's way too early.
I think that's a little too early. I mean, Buffalo Bill could have put this on in the basement. It would have changed the mood a little bit.
Hmm.
Buffalo Bill could have put this on.
Mm-hmm. Would have been much more upbeat than what he went with, but...
Nina Cherry? Buffalo Stance?
No.
I'm Too Sexy.
Oh, good one.
No, but I would say you're getting close. I would also say that this is a group that I would question, is this an actual group? Or was this just the number of studio musicians that put this song out? D-Light is not right, but we're hovering all around it. The title of this song is an imperative. It is an instruction.
Oh, CNC Music Factory.
There you go.
Oh! Gonna make you sweat.
Everybody dance now. Parentheses gonna make you sweat, or the other way around. It's
the parentheses that really sells it.
Yeah, yeah. That's my question. Was there a CNC Music Factory, or was that like?
I think that
we mocked up a demo and went and did some cocaine, and we got this single now.
It's
so.
Like one of those things that happens when somebody doesn't show up for a recording on time. That's a joke because I did that today. And then the studio musicians are like, "Well, let's just jam."
Right.
And then they're like, "We got it."
Yeah, I think that's kind of what it was. Like a bunch of folks, like. Nine Inch Nails is really just Trent Reznor.
Right.
Musical group formed in 1989 by David Cole and Robert...
Clavillis.
How do you know that?
Cole and Clavillis. Because the 90s was a time when they get... Where producers got shout-outs on tracks. And I've heard those dudes shouted out.
So that's CNC.
Cole and Clavillis.
But also Freedom Williams, who bought the rights and now will show up on those 90s stores with Freedom Williams's CNC Music Factory. It's
amazing.
Look.
It's like you barely had people coming to see CNC Music Factory.
That's why you do the package tour.